Hi, I'm Ronnie Shuchuk. This is number 0313, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0313. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, former child star Kathy Garver, best known as Sissy from Family Affair, on the upcoming Guiding Stars Gala to help child actors. Were there dangers and pitfalls lurking for kid actors?
I think when I was a child star, we were very protected, I thought. But also there was a substrata where there were things going on that people were very hesitant to admit or didn't want to expose themselves to not getting a job as others may have been exposing themselves to the child stars. And it was much more quiet society. I think because of our social media and everything that's going on today, so many more things are out in the open.
Jim Hurler, co-author of Planet Boomer, Retire Now for Less in Southeast Asia.
There's 10 million Canadians, 44 to 64. The very wealthy don't need to consider this. The very poor, it's going to be tough to get them into these countries. But the vast majority in the middle, some of them are stretched in their abilities to live a comfortable retirement, whether they retire at 55 or 60 or 65. What these South Asian countries do is they offer you an alternative at least a 50% less cost of living.
Heather Wagenhals, host of Unlock Your Wealth Radio, talks about viral videos.
Not every video has viral quality, and not all videos that have gone viral were professionally produced or had a whole lot of thought into them. So it seems like it's hit or miss, but there are some ways to help try to create that viral video rush for yourself and to be able to cash in on this internet version of a gold rush.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0313, was Rockin' Ronnie Shuchuk, host of the Barbecue Secrets podcast. He's also the author of a book that I consider to be a barbecue Bible. It's Barbecue Secrets Deluxe, the very best recipes, tips, and tricks from a barbecue champion. And by the way, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which you just heard Ronnie mention, show number 0313, and you'll find the links to the Barbecue Secret podcast website. Thank you very much, Ronnie, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? So we start off with a couple of stories that definitely come under the heading of lame defenses, and ironically or not, both of the stories come from the very active freak story state of Florida. Story number one, 40-year-old Daniel Baker and 19-year-old Robert Richardson were arrested in Altoona, Florida, after getting caught loading appliances from a vacant house. Now, according to the arrest report, both men appeared incredulous to learn that items in a vacant house aren't just free. Well, now they know they're not, and they'll also learn the word freedom, or lack thereof, for their future endeavors. And story number two, 6 days earlier, about 20 miles away in Tavares, Florida, 23-year-old Corey Ramsey was arrested for burglary when a police officer caught him sitting on a toilet in a vacant for sale house, attending to a need. Ramsey's extensive petty crime rap sheet belied his explanation for being there, that he was contemplating buying the $299,000 house and wanted to try it out first. Well, I'm sure he's going to be going to the big house now, where he can try that out for an extensive period of time. About 200 protesters gathered in front of Hong Kong police headquarters on August the 2nd to denounce the 3.5-month jail sentence given to 30-year-old Ying Le Ying, who was convicted of assault for shoving a police officer with her chest. Women and some men wearing bras as outerwear chanted, "Breast is not a weapon." Ng was originally protesting the hardly sexy issue of import-export abuses between Hong Kong and mainland China cities. Now, generally speaking, breasts are not a weapon, although in the past on the Stuff File program, we did have a story that dealt with someone who was smothered to death. Somehow I don't think this applies here, though. 38-year-old Nathaniel Harrison was arrested in July in a Phoenix suburb on several charges, including possession of a deadly weapon during a felony, but he escaped an even more serious charge when a second deadly weapon failed to engage. Harrison reportedly intended to retaliate against a snitch and arrived at the man's home carrying a rattlesnake, which he supposedly pointed at the man, hoping it would bite him. However, the snake balked, and Harrison's attempted payback failed. You know, this is what every man knows. You need to keep your snake under control. A Florida woman accused of leaving her young children in a car while drinking in a bar was caught on camera having her 4-year-old blow into her breathalyzer. The Apopka police officer's body camera was recording when 35-year-old April King handed the breathalyzer installed in her vehicle to her 4-year-old son so he could blow into it and start the car. The officer was questioning King on allegations she left the boy and his 2-year-old sibling alone in the car while she drank at Frogger's Grill and Bar. Now, King was arrested on child endangerment charges and held in lieu of $1,500 bail. King's husband, Doug King, said he had the breathalyzer installed in his wife's car after her recent stint in rehab. He said his wife has a drinking problem and he does not intend to bail her out of jail, says Doug. "I think this is the best thing for her. Rehab hasn't worked, and she hasn't learned anything from it." He said he is taking his children, who were released into the custody of a babysitter because he was out of town at the time of the incident, and is moving to Oklahoma. Well, that's some tough love, isn't it? You know, I'll bet his wife will still be able to find a lawyer to prevent him from taking the kids out of state. Ain't the legal system grand? Yeah. And speaking of the legal system, a diner filed a lawsuit this past week against a Missouri restaurant famous for its throwed rolls after a piece of bread hit her and caused an injury. Troy Tucker sued Lambert's Cafe in Sykeston, Missouri, after she said she was hit by a roll and sustained a lacerated cornea with a vitreous detachment, and all head, neck, eyes, and vision were severely damaged. This was back in September of last year. Now, she is seeking $25,000 to pay for her medical bills and legal fees. The lawsuit said Lambert's Cafe should know about the dangers caused by throwing rolls. Jerry Johnson, the general manager of the restaurant, says the employees never mean to injure anyone when they throw the rolls. He said people have tried to sue the restaurant in the past, and in some cases, the company's insurance has paid the cost of medical bills. It's unclear if Tucker has a case for her allegations of carelessness and negligence against Lambert's Cafe. There were multiple signs, and still are multiple signs, both inside and outside the restaurant, calling it home of the throwed rolls. Well, if she really wants to sue, she might have a better chance suing on the grounds of stale bread. I mean, I'm not sure fresh rolls could do all the damage she's alleging. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the Ohio State Highway Patrol didn't have to do much investigation to determine the cause of a crash in Middleton, Ohio, when a vehicle crashed into a utility pole and then came to rest on train tracks. Naturally, a train was coming. The driver ignored the train's horn, the engineer said, and when he hit the pickup, the driver was ejected and flew 30 feet into a gravel pit. When emergency responders got to her, the driver was not only still alive, but allegedly told them, "Don't bother me, I'm drunk." 24-year-old Jessica D. Barnes was hospitalized in serious condition with head injury and is under arrest, charged with DUI, failure to control her vehicle, and not wearing a seatbelt. Now that's called hitting the trifecta. I'm just going to guess that her blood alcohol level is probably triple the legal limit, too. There you go. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Over 40 former and current actors and child stars are taking part in the first annual Guiding Stars Gala in Hollywood. It benefits A Minor Consideration, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the lives and working conditions of child stars. And joining us on the line right now is Kathy Garver, best known as Sissy on the hit CBS sitcom Family Affair. Kathy joins us on the line from California. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. We last spoke about, 6 years ago, back when you did the Family Affair cookbook.
And now I have a new book coming out that is really kind of apropos of what A Minor Consideration, Paul Peterson's organization about helping child stars, is all about. My new book, which will be out September 1st, is Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. And this will be followed in the spring of 2016 about ex-child stars, Where Are They Now?
Wow, so perfect timing all the way around.
Yes.
The thing about child actors is we often hear, unfortunately, a lot of the horror stories of what can happen to child actors through their growing years and even beyond. But I'm just curious to know, even though we hear these stories, something like this that's taking place, Guiding Stars Gala, why is it so important now? Are things not getting better for child actors?
Well, I think it's interesting that what is happening is that more things are coming out into the open, and that's good and there's bad. I think when I was a child star many years ago, I had to admit, we were very protected, I thought, but also there was a substrata where there were things going on that people were very hesitant to admit or didn't want to expose themselves to not getting a job, as others may have been exposing themselves to the child stars. And it was a much more quiet society. I think because of our social media and everything that's going on today, so many more things are out in the open. And interestingly enough, because there are so many more outlets for just entertainment in general, whether it's on Netflix or Amazon or, YouTube, there are more outlets for entertainment and they need more child actors in those, whether it's in a reality series or a fictional type of story. So you have more children out there being exposed to an adult kind of a profession. And some people that don't have the wonderful ethics and morals that we would expect to find in a nice, savvy adult. So a long-winded, I'm sorry, answer to your question, no, it's not necessarily getting better. But I think through, organizations like A Minor Consideration, and we have, as you probably know, a page on Facebook that Allison Arngrim from Little House on the Prairie started, which is the Ex-Child Star Secret Society. And we former child stars get together and kind of pool our resources and try and help one another. And that's kind of what this fundraiser that we're having is trying to help the kids that perhaps have been molested, the kids that are unbelievably depressed, the kids that the parents stole all their money and they are penniless. That happened to Johnny Whitaker on my show Family Affair, and unfortunately Anissa Jones, who committed suicide of a drug overdose. So there are still people and kids that are undergoing this supreme pressure.
Now, you mentioned exposure. I'm just wondering if you think things are much more difficult today because of social media. I mean, how difficult would it have been for you and the kids you were around when you were a child star if you had the kind of things that are going on right now on Twitter and Facebook, and unfortunately the internet trolls are out there? Would that have been difficult on the psyche of a young child or a teen growing up, do you think?
Absolutely. And that's a very good point to bring up, because back then, I mean, you were growing up in front of millions of people, but if you happened to have a pimple on your face or wore a wrong sweater, that was kind of glossed over. Now, any little thing that happens, you have the cyber bullies for the people and the kids that, you know, go across millions of people that see them. And especially for a child who is trying to make that difficult transition just from child to teenager, and then from teenager to adult, that's a difficult process without being on TV or in the movies or a model or a sports figure. And then put that on the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, or whatever, it is very difficult to deal with.
Now,
now Disney has a therapist that comes to see the child stars and the tweeners that are on Disney TV series once a week. And they have to attend, and it's part of the contract. And I applaud that. I said, yes, at least some help to kind of counteract this.
That sounds like a great idea. Now, I've had an opportunity over the years to talk to several former child stars, and one of the questions I always ask, and I'm often surprised by sometimes the answer, is would you let your child be a child star?
Well, yes. I mean, my son, who is now 24 years old, when he was born, of course, the most beautiful child that was ever born. Don't all moms think that? And so he started when he was 6 months old, and I had him in a print ad, and then he had an agent, and he joined SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA now, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists in the United States, and he was kind of on his way. However, when he was 12 and he was in that tween stage, he said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And I said, okay, buddy. And he never went on another interview, and he didn't do any other jobs. And he worked quite a bit. But, yes, I would. I mean, I had great experiences. I had wonderful parents who saved all my money, who were supportive of me and protective of me. And I hope I am not just somebody that is special. I mean, I would hope that any child star that, or any child actor who is entering the entertainment business would be able to have the blessings that I have had.
You know, it's unfortunate, just recently we lost someone who was a child star many, many years ago. And I had the opportunity to talk to him on several occasions in radio, and that is Dick Van Patten. And the thing I always found fascinating about him is you would talk to him about being a child star, and he even wrote a book about sharing tips on how to be a child star and be the parent of a child star. And this was a guy who just seemed so appreciative of everything that happened in his career. With the exception of yourself, he seemed to be the antithesis of what I hear a lot of. I mean, you really enjoyed everything you went through, and you had no problem putting your own child through this, and you seemed to get the benefits of being a child actor. Are you guys an anomaly?
Well, I hope not. And I think that with more education, the parents are understanding how to raise a child actor in kind of a strange situation. And I had an education, and as I said, my parents saved my money. So that was all very good. And I just did an interview a couple days ago, and they said, well, did you miss anything growing up? I said, I don't think so. I said, I had a wonderful experience, and I learned many things that I never would have been shown had I not had those experiences. In my book, I cite Mr. Munoz, who was in Malcolm in the Middle, and he was asked, well, do you think you missed anything in your childhood growing up? And he said, sitting back in his new Porsche, I don't think so. Well, what did I miss? And, you know, now he's this champion race car driver. It's attitude, Anthony. I think that It depends on the attitude of the parents, and it depends on the attitude of the child.
Okay, Vera, we have just a few minutes to go. I just want to bring up that event that's taking place, which we talked about initially. That gala is taking place Sunday, August 30th. The Lucky Strike Live and Hollywood and at Hollywood and Highland, rather. What's going on in that event, and where does the money go that a minor consideration gains in this nonprofit organization?
There's going to be a red carpet event, and all wonderful ex-child stars that people know and love, Paul Peterson from the Donna Reed Show and Erin Murphy from Bewitched and just a host of others, will be walking that red carpet, meet and greet, bowling even. How much fun is that? The money goes to help the child actors make that transition through education, through helping them, saying you don't necessarily have to be an actor all your life. You can be a writer, you can be a director, you can really do anything you want. So those workshops, you know, to help so we don't have some of the horrible stories like Anissa Jones on my show, or Dana Plato, or here's Suzanne Crow, who died, they say, of a heart attack when she was just 52, from the Partridge Family. So it all is, you know, a lot of people would say, well, why does a child star need money? Because they are in a special position, and so many of them, their money has all been spent by their parents or their managers. So it goes to education and workshops for those kids.
Kathy, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Maybe we can have you back on the show when your book actually comes out. It's the book is Surviving Sissy, correct?
That's right, and it'll be out September 1st, which is close.
Yeah, and
it's Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Hollywood, of course, available on Amazon.com or on my website, KathyGarver.com.
And the event is taking place again on Sunday, August 30th, in California, the Lucky Strike Live at Hollywood and Highland. And people can also find out more information by going to the website for the organization. I thank you very, very much, Kathy, for being on the program with us again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Kathy Garver, one of the many child stars involved in the Guiding Stars Gala in Hollywood that benefits the nonprofit group A Minor Consideration. You can find out more information by going to their website, which is aminorconsideration.org. You can also find out more about Kathy's new book, Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood, by going to her website at kathygarver.com. And we'll have her back on the show real soon to talk about her book just after it's released sometime next month. Of course, you'll find all the links I just mentioned. Just go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0313, and you'll find them there.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the comic book. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll tell you how you can retire for less in Southeast Asia. Plus, we'll discuss viral videos. And of course, there is an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, three men face charges after allegedly going on a treasure hunt in the sewers below Flatbush, New York. The suspects were pulled out empty-handed from the sewers after their four-hour adventure. Said Police Commissioner Bill Bratton, "God knows what they were looking for, and damn sure I wouldn't be crawling through the sewers of New York." 21-year-old Marquise Evans, 35-year-old Damian Nieves, and 45-year-old David Hannibal faced trespassing and reckless endangerment charges. They apparently went into the sewer with metal detectors to help find valuables. Evans, a Department of Environmental Protection employee, allegedly gave the other two access to the manhole. "We're not going to weld them all shut," Bratton said. "Any idiot that wants to crawl below the streets, unfortunately, can do it by prying." The police were alerted to the incident by a citizen who saw them pop the manhole open and climb in. Bratton praised the caller for following the "see something, say something" adage. Very strange. You know, the cops didn't want to follow them in because apparently when they opened up the manhole cover and they went down, the smell was just so overwhelming that they had to come back out, which says something about the guys who went down and rummaged around for 4 hours. And you know, this takes dumpster diving to a whole new level. Anyway, authorities have had enough and are finally cracking down hard on illegals crossing the Mexican border. Not American officials, but Mexico's. They've had it with sports fishermen crossing into Mexico from California into their territorial waters without passports, fishing permits, or tourist permits. Mexico normally just warns boaters and tells them to turn around, but that wasn't working. Mexico estimates they're now dealing with 40 to 50,000 such incidents every year. You know, maybe someone should build a wall. Anyway, Mexican authorities warn that boaters will be taken into custody, processed, and deported. "It will be an inconvenience," promises a spokesperson from the Mexican consulate in San Diego, "but they will not be charged with a crime." Oh, Mexico, Mexico, Mexico. Is it really going to be an inconvenience to these fishing tourists? Do you really want to stop this problem in a hurry? I have a simple solution for you, Mexico. Just start impounding their boats. Now that will send a message. Okay, a witness in a nearby apartment building had seen someone on the roof of the Ronald Reagan Federal Building and Courthouse in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, several times after the building closed. So when it happened again, she took photos, which she sent to a local TV station, expressing concerns over the security of the building. The pictures reveal a couple having sex. The TV station turned the photos over to federal authorities, who determined that one of the people shown in the photos works for the U.S. Marshals Service, the agency responsible for tracking down federal fugitives and federal court security. The Marshals Service said it is confident that security integrity of the courthouse remains intact. Security integrity, perhaps. Other types of integrity, not so much. And gee, I hope they use protection, you know, just to be secure. And we have one more item in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Attorney Richard A. Luthman admits his request is, quote, ridiculousness. But, so claims the New York lawyer, are the accusations that he helped a client keep money away from the plaintiffs who'd won their case against the client and are now suing the lawyer. The attorney's serious proposal? Trial by combat. In a 10-page section of his brief, Luthman argues that in 1774, Parliament blocked an effort to abolish the medieval practice in the colonies, that neither the federal government nor New York State ever banned it, and even that it is a right protected under the Ninth Amendment. Okay. So he makes an interesting argument, which for me leads to a conundrum. Does this mean that this lawyer is more confident in his jousting skills than his ability to argue this case? If so, that is a cause for concern, don't you think? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Let's take a look at Canadians in their golden years. If you are Canadian, do you think you will be able to retire the way you'd like to? Perhaps even living someplace else in an exotic locale? Jim Hurler is the co-author of Planet Boomer, Retire Now for Less in Southeast Asia. And Jim joins us on the line right now from Toronto. He's just back. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, where do you spend your time?
Well, we have lived all over Asia for the last 10 years. We started in Singapore. We moved to Shanghai for 3 years, back to Singapore, and now we live on the island of Penang in Malaysia.
Wow. Now, we say we. We should mention that you co-wrote this book with your wife, Ellen Ma. So what were you guys doing before you decided to retire in Southeast Asia?
Well, we were both in marketing in Toronto. I was a president of a global advertising agency in Toronto. Ellen was vice president of marketing of Shoppers Drug Mart. We left 10 years ago. She took a job in the tech world in Asia, and I was working for a Saudi prince.
Ah, so first of all, you didn't just simply retire to exotic locales. You had other jobs as well.
Yeah, we've had other jobs through the years, and I would call it semi-retirement because, you know, it didn't interrupt our travel or our visits to exotic locations. More of an entrepreneurial life, business life, than a salaried life.
Okay. So you decided to write this book, Planet Boomer. First of all, who did you write it for, and what was the impetus at the time when you said, you know, we need to write this book?
I'll try to do this quickly. We had two very good friends in Shanghai, Australians who are professional journalists, editor of the Sydney Morning Herald. They were writing for the Australian Financial Review. I called them when they moved back to Sydney, and he said, we're writing another book. And I said, well, you've written lots of books. And she said, no, this one's about retirement in Southeast Asia. And if you think about it, big country, Australia, small population, universal health care, highly taxed, people living longer, little battering in the financial crisis of 2008, about 6 million baby boomers, 44 to 64. And he said, a lot of people in Australia are not going to be able to retire in comfort. And he said, you know, and we know, that you can go to Southeast Asia, any number of countries and destinations, and live very well for a lot less money. That's what the book is all about. So then I said, let's do a book for Canada, because we're in the same boat.
Mm. Now, is this something, because you described your lifestyle before and what you were doing as a living, you described what your friends were doing as a living, is this something that is for everyone, or does it take a certain type of personality to be able to, I guess, jump into this lifestyle?
I think you have to have a little bit of an adventurous spirit, a little bit, not a great deal. There's 10 million Canadians, 44 to 64. The very wealthy don't need to consider this. The very poor, it's going to be tough to get them into these countries. But the vast majority in the middle, some of them are stretched in their abilities to live a comfortable retirement, whether they retire at 55 or 60 or 65. What these South Asian countries do is they offer you an alternative at least a 50% less cost of living.
Now, you mentioned, as I said, you were talking to you from you're in Toronto right now, so you've come back home for a while. When you moved away, did it involve liquidating your lifestyle back home and starting anew someplace else, or do you have a certain type of anchor back here in Canada?
Well, there's two ways to do this. Canada allows you 183 days a year out of the country. You maintain all your benefits, your provincial health care, contribute to your RSPs, and pay taxes. Anything more than that, and you become a resident of the country that you're going to. If you declare non-residency in Canada, you're still a citizen, just non-residency, you no longer have to pay Canadian taxes, but you don't have to, or you don't get health care, and you can't contribute to your RSP. The government of Canada, the Revenue Canada, looks at your residency status, not by law, but by individual case. They call it major ties and minor ties. A major tie would be owning a house. A minor tie would be maintaining a credit card. So what we did 10 years ago is we said, we don't want to pay Canadian taxes anymore, so let's be non-residents, pay almost no tax. I mean, my tax rate in Singapore was 5%. And we rented our house to a third-party non-relative. 5 years later, they wanted to buy it, so we sold it to them. So there's all kinds of different ways that you can skin this cat, that you can maintain your relationship with Canada as detailed as you want it to be, or if you want to do a more permanent move, as we did, you can declare non-residency, don't pay taxes, and pay taxes in the country of your choice.
Your book, you write this book, you tell this story, you share all the benefits of what it is to retire comfortably someplace else. Are there any negatives? What are some of the pitfalls people have to watch out for if they want to consider doing this?
Well, I think there's, in all honesty, there's a couple. But I think I can also answer them. A lot of people are concerned, I'm going to a place, do they speak English? Well, a lot of these countries, English is very close to being the number one language, if not the second language. Where I live in Penang, which is a former British colony, everybody speaks English perfectly. I think distance is another issue. You're 15 hours away from Hong Kong, another 2 hours from Penang or Singapore. If you're of the age where you're concerned about your kids or you want to spend time with your grandkids or you're going to miss your Tim Hortons double-double or Harvey's cheeseburger, you know, it might not be the right thing for you. That's where I think the little bit of adventurous spirit comes in. I still think the fact remains that of those 10 million Canadians, some of them are going to be really stretched to live comfortably for the next 20 years.
Hmm. How did you go about deciding where you chose to live? Because there's several places to live within Southeast Asia.
Well, you know, we've been to every one of these countries. There's five countries in the book, ones that we chose, and 15 different destinations. Our Australian writing partners had done Penang, but strangely, even though it's only an hour's flight away, we'd never been to Penang. So I said to Ellen, we have to go. We can't not go and put it in the book. We went for one weekend and said, wow, we could live here. And we could live here so inexpensively, it'd be fantastic. And we went for another weekend, found a place to live, and we moved a month later.
Now, I would assume that with internet connectivity and the like, that this is a lot easier than it was, say, 20 years ago for people to do.
Well, God, I lived in China for 3.5 years. That was difficult. This is easy. Very sophisticated internet phone services. We FaceTime with everybody or Skype with everybody. We do all of our banking online all around the world. These countries are much more first world than I think people think. We're very comfortable engaging with family, engaging with friends and relatives, doing our banking. And Malaysia is just as good as Singapore is, so there's no problem in that regard.
You mentioned your Australian friends, and they're doing this type of thing. You've written this book for Canada. They've written this book for their book for Australia. What kind of numbers are we talking about as far as expats are concerned, say, Canadians versus Australians in areas that you're talking about?
Well, there's obviously, because of the north-south link, Southeast Asia is Australia's backyard. A million Australians go to Bali every year. A million Australians go to Phuket in Thailand. Canada is not nearly as sophisticated, no, not sophisticated, as familiar with Southeast Asia as Australians are. But in terms of overall retirees, there's this extraordinarily wonderful visa in Malaysia that we're on called My Second Home Malaysia. There's 23,000 expats on that visa. You get a 10-year renewable visa, no tax on foreign income. You could buy a house freehold outright. Apartment rents are 50 to 60% less. Food is 70% less. You can buy a car tax-free. You can import a car tax and duty-free. So very sophisticated. Thailand has a similar system. In both countries, you have to put some money on deposit, but you get 3.4% interest on your money tax-free.
I'm sure just some of the things you just said right now are making some people's eyebrows perk up, which is, which if it is definitely a reason to get your book. I should mention the last The subtitle on the cover of the book is Your Essential Guide to Healthcare, Living Costs, Property Taxes, Visas in Bali, Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam, and Cambodia. You do cover it all. Under the headline of If I Knew Then What I Know Now, is this something you would have done even sooner?
I don't think so. I was 55 when I left. I had a big career in Toronto. I was, you know, extraordinarily happy with what I did. I gave up that career to go to Asia. Do I regret that? Well, some days I do. But the experience that I've had, the countries and places I've visited, the people I've met, and I have to tell you, the best thing about doing this is the incredible people that you meet. You know, we were invited to Denmark next week. We're invited to Argentina for Christmas. The expat community is vibrant, really interesting, and all like-minded. They all found Penang or Bangkok or Chiang Mai or Koh Samui. They all found that as their second home, or as time went on, their first home. We did 100 interviews for this book, and we've used 48. People have issues. No one has ever regretted making the move.
So it's interesting. You not only get to live in a place that is exotically interesting for yourself, you get to meet interesting locals in the lands that you live in, but also like-minded people from around the world who have come to that place for the same reasons you have. So it really is a melting pot.
It is. They're my dinner companions. They're my tennis partners. They're my golf partners. We visit little mystery islands where you can go for a weekend with crystal clear waters and coral gardens and swim with sharks for, you know, $400 for 5 days. Absolutely beautiful. And if I may add, some people, as they approach retirement, are concerned about health care. And what kind of health care would I possibly get in Asia? Well, Asia is the forerunner of medical tourism. Medical tourism is the whole idea that a private hospital, private facility, can set itself up to service the needs of offshore people for a fraction of the cost that they pay at home. In Little Penang, where I live, there are 9 hospitals and 5 medical tourism hospitals. They look like the Four Seasons. They're absolutely spectacular. And their costs are 70% less than what you would pay in America or Canada.
Wow. The book is called Planet Boomer, Retire Now for Less in Southeast Asia. It's written by Jim Hurler and his wife, Ellen Ma. Jim, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, you're very welcome. I hope a lot of people read the book and make the decision that this is something worth looking at.
Jim Hurler, co-author of Planet Boomer, Retire Now for Less in Southeast Asia. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0313, and you'll find links to Jim's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you heard about the new museum devoted to torts that will be opening soon? Not tarts, those delicious pastries, but torts, lawsuits involving injuries or civil wrongs. Auto accidents and slip and fall cases are examples of torts. The museum is being built by Ralph Nader, so it'll probably feature airbags, cars, and other things that have changed over the years because of lawsuits that Nader and other trial lawyers have filed. I'm guessing it probably won't feature seesaws, diving boards from hotel pools, and other things we don't see in America anymore because we have too many tort lawsuits. Those items could fill a whole section of the library. Let's be fair. America's history with tort lawsuits definitely has a positive side, but it has a negative side too. Even the New York Times recognized this when it wrote an article about the museum and wondered if it would be able to serve hot coffee in its cafe for fear of scalding customers' mouths. Interesting question. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And we have time for just one more quick Stuff File news story before we get to our next guest. Of course, there's an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on. Here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, two employees at Buddy's Seafood Market in Panama City Beach, Florida, got into an argument on the job. Police say 26-year-old Orlando Thompson at first walked away, but then came back with a 15-inch knife and stabbed Caleb Joshua Haley, killing him. The argument? How much spice goes into the restaurant's gumbo? Thompson has been charged with manslaughter. Yep, everyone's a food critic. I hope they don't make him the prison cook. Or then again, maybe they should. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Everyone from pet owners to parents are looking to cash in on viral videos these days, but when it comes to web video, does fame equal fortune? We put that question to Heather Wagenhals. She's an identity theft risk management specialist, host of Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and is the author of Cracking Your Money Code. She joins us on the line from Phoenix. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for being on the program with us. We appreciate you being on. Now, one of the things I always find interesting when I hear the term viral video is that people toss that around left, right, and center, and they really don't know what viral video means. So let's explain that, because it's about numbers, right? And large numbers.
It is. It's about copious amounts of views specifically for your video. And what makes a video viral is that, you know, it could have been a video that may have been out for a while, but then all of a sudden, one person who's an influencer in social media shares it, and then everybody jumps on the bandwagon, has to see it, gets the laugh or the emotional impetus that it draws from you, and then you have to send it on because you want to be a part of this big bandwagon, and off the video goes, and you can go from maybe having only 10,000 views over a 6 to 9 month period of time, and then in the matter of 3 days, some influencer manages to put it out there on social media once they get a hold of it, and then it goes nuts, and now you have over 1 million views in just a few days.
And for a lot of people out there in cyberspace, this is like a modern day version of the gold rush, isn't it? Once you get people out there hearing that, oh, there's money to be made from videos, everyone starts literally panning.
Absolutely. And, you know, and what does that mean? There's a lot of wheat that needs to be separated from the chaff. So not every video has viral qualities, and not all videos that have gone viral were professionally produced or had a whole lot of thought into them. So it seems like it's hit or miss, but there are some ways to help try to create that viral video rush for yourself and to be able to cash in on this internet version of a gold rush.
Okay, well, let's talk about cashing in. Just how does one do that?
Well, first off, you have to have the rights to that particular video. So ownership of the video is important. But like I said, the quality doesn't necessarily have to be there. It doesn't have to be professionally produced. Half of the videos that go viral are shot from mobile phones these days. So you have to be the owner or creator of the content. So if you make your own little cartoon strip or something and animate it, that's another type of viral video. First off, you have to own it. Second, you've got to have a place to distribute it. So you must be on Vimeo or YouTube or Vidler or one of these big video hosting and sharing websites. So you've got to be able to have a place to put it. So you need to create an account. And those are always for free. Mm. The next thing you have to do is you have to sign up for ad revenue. So you need to be able to place ad revenue on your videos. And then you also have to have a social network that you're connected to that you can distribute the videos to. And that is the secret sauce.
Now, when somebody decides, oh, I want to go out there and make videos, they've got to really think about what they want to make a video of. It's not just a situation of, let's all go online and get rich. I mean, you've got to do something, I would assume, that you're somewhat passionate about and ready to explore with, that you can grow with, and hopefully that will turn into something that will earn money. It's sort of like putting the horse before the cart, right? I mean, the cart has got to be something of substance that you're interested in doing.
Well, if you're looking at career income from it, then yes. But, you know, most of the videos that go viral are accidental video shots. You know, things that we didn't expect to happen when we were filming just an ordinary day at the racetrack or our child learning his first steps or something like that. You know, so, I mean, think about this. You know, the family that did the four-year-old, when they told her she was going to Disneyland, and she got really emotional and started to cry and couldn't believe it, and she was freaking out. That video was able to generate over $100,000 in revenue. And that video alone has now paid for her college education. And she's only 4 years old. And, you know, it was just something cute and endearing. The intent necessarily wasn't meant to go get rich at it. You know, but if you are passionate and can provide a value and be consistent over time with it, you can make money with viral videos as well.
Okay, so you talked about that little girl who was going to Disneyland and got all emotional, and the amount of money that video earned. How many views did that have to get to earn that kind of money? Because I think some people are mistaken about the amount of views it takes. They think it's less than it is more. You have to have a lot of views to get that kind of money, right?
Yes, you know, and you know, now you can add to, like, you can add in advertising and commercials that is what they call pre-roll before your YouTube videos. But back in the day, you had to be invited in order to get it. You had to have over 1 million views before you were even invited to participate in a revenue share. But you do have to be in the millions, because you think every view gets you fractions of a penny. And so how many, if it takes 100 pennies in just $1, and depending on what fraction you're at, what revenue share split you have with YouTube, you know, and it's different for different people, because if you're a consistent producer of high volume, you're going to get a better percentage rate with YouTube or the other video hosting providers than if you're just a newbie at it. So you're going to have to bring in millions of views if you want to be making thousands of dollars because of this whole fractions of a penny thing.
Now, there could be some downsides, and the reason why I bring that up, I when I introduced you, I also mentioned that you are an identity theft risk management specialist. And this is something that always concerns me, especially when people put a lot of videos up of their kids. Is there a concern about who's out there watching their video, how it can be manipulated, and how they can find out stuff about you based on the video you put up?
Right. I mean, and there is the privacy issue. You know, when you put it out there on the internet is forever. So people can find out information. You know, you start spilling personal details about your life, and now, you know, identity thieves have information. How many times do people put their kids' names as their passwords? It's their kid or their dog. Even though they're told not to, they figured, oh, it won't happen to me. People think they're invincible. This is one of the things that we talk about on the Unlock Your Wealth radio program, as we discuss the ways that we kind of fool ourselves into believing we're better off than we are. And so, you know, there's that factor, but just the wealth factor from the video itself. If you don't set the right controls in your privacy panel and put the right copyright protections on your video, someone else can download and record your video and then upload it to their own account and share your video and make money off of your video instead of you, who was the original content creator of that. I found on the internet an interview that I did with Larry Winget. Somebody stole my show in its entirety with my copyright disclosures and uploaded it with a picture of Larry Winget on their YouTube channel. I'm in a fight right now. I'm here at the studio right now. We're taking a break from recording the show ourselves, and I'm in a fight right now, a copyright, you know, infringement fight with a YouTuber. And they stole my show, and they're getting views, and they're running pre-roll. And I don't do that to my listeners. I don't run pre-roll on my radio show. And they're making money off of my copyrighted original work. It's insanity. And it can happen to anybody. It can happen to, you know, Joe Q Public just as easily as it does me.
Wow. I mentioned also earlier your radio show, which you just did, Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Where can one find the show?
It's real simple, unlockyourwealthradio.com.
Excellent. And your book, Cracking Your Money Code, I understand that's coming out now?
Yes. And if you want to get up on the newsletter where you can get free tips delivered to your inbox regularly, visit crackingyourmoneycode.com.
crackingyourmoneycode.com. And also you mentioned unlockyourwealthradio.com. Heather, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Most fascinating indeed.
Oh, the pleasure was mine. Make it a prosperous day.
Heather Wagenhals. Again, you can check out her websites at unlockyourwealthradio.com and crackingyourmoneycode.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0313, and you'll find the links. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
A British man was arrested in Warsaw after allegedly trying to rob a bank using pre-written notes because he could not speak Polish. The 33-year-old man approached the cashier at the bank in the center of the Polish capital and produced a picture of a gun that he had drawn himself. He then pulled out another card with, "This is a robbery, I have a gun, give me the money." That part was written in Polish. But the pictorial threat failed to have the desired effect on the bank employee. The cashier kept her head and told him to rejoin the line. The man, whose name has not been released, apparently followed the cashier's instruction and sat down with other people waiting to be served. Responding promptly to the emergency call, the police arrived and arrested the Briton at the scene. Police reported that the man, who was unarmed, by the way, has pleaded guilty and has already been charged with attempted robbery. Polish police have provided few details on the Briton, only saying that he lived in Germany for a year and had only been in Poland for a few hours before trying to rob the bank. He could face up to 12 years behind bars. You know, when someone says you enter the bank with guns drawn, I don't think they mean it literally. Now, I know there's a language barrier here, but why, oh why, would you attempt to rob a bank with just the drawing of a gun? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0313. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0313. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.